go.
Yes. I call this meeting of the Marin County Parks and Open Space Commission to order on this day of September 18th. And I first ask to see whether there are any public comments to be made on items that are not on the agenda. Hearing none here, I ask, is there anyone in the queue that would like to make a comment?
President Diet, we do have one member in the queue. His name is David Kempler. David, please unmute.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Great. Hi, my name is David Kempler. I'm the Director of Volunteers for LITA, Love is the Answer. We are one of the recipients of Measure A funds. We do a program every summer called Seniors in the Park, where we are fortunate through your support to be able to take residents who are otherwise living in assisted living or nursing homes and take them into one of Marin County's beautiful parks through your help and assistance. We have finished our program for this summer. We took a total of 38 residents and 14 community staff to Lagoon Park, Hal Brown Creekside, Stafford Lake, and the Lagoon Park Nursery. And each event was incredible and amazing. And the staff, both who I interacted with via email and who were the rangers on site, everybody was marvelous. So again, just thank you so much for helping LITA and the isolated senior citizens of Marin County to be able to be part of this program.
David, thank you very much for speaking up, and we're glad to hear that.
Chair Dyer, there are no more speakers in the queue.
That's exactly what we were looking for.
Great.
Good job.
Coming now to the director's report. Commissioner Director.
All right. Let's see, is that where we're at on the agenda?
We're on item number 3.
Absolutely. Okay. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Chris Chamberlain, Director, General Manager, Marin County Parks, Marin County Open Space District. It's good to see you all. As we wrap up a busy summer, we've got some exciting things to report out on. First and foremost, I wanted to note the Bolinas Y Wetland Restoration Project is nearing completion. It's my understanding that we'll be done by the end of the month. This has been a 2-year construction project that has had a significant infrastructure component. For those of you that have been out to Bolinas over the last 2 summers, you'll have noticed that there's been some significant changes out there. There's a new bridge installed along the Olema-Bolinas Road, and that bridge is now open and functioning for traffic. The crossover road has been removed, and they are now installing a creek channel to restore the connectivity to Lewis Gulch Creek that will allow for the wetland to naturally accrete and restore its floodplain. And really just a wonderful partnership with our public works partners. And our team has just done a fantastic job navigating. This is one of the biggest projects we as a open space district have undertaken. And we're just thrilled to be nearing this finish line. We're not quite done yet, and we'll have probably a much more in-depth presentation at our November commission meeting, just kind of walking you all through kind of through a photo journey of that project. So, but we're really excited to be where we're at today on that project. Also wanted to note, we have completed some rework that we needed to do up on the Eagle Rock Trail, and also we've completed the Jameson Trail. I believe there's 5 new creek crossings, water crossings there. All 5 of those bridges were built in-house with our team. I'd encourage the community to get up there. It's on the Terralinda Sleepy Hollow Reserve, just up behind Terralinda High School. There's just absolutely some tremendous craftsmanship that was done, and the community thus far has been very appreciative, and it's been successful. I wanted to provide a quick update. At our last meeting, we presented to your board on a potential project for the Buck Gulch Falls Trail. I wanted to let you know that the board this past Tuesday approved a contract with a consultant to begin the environmental permitting process and the environmental review process. We're expecting that to take, roughly, 6 to 9 months, and then we'll be coming probably back to the Board of Supervisors, and there'll be a public comment period, a 30-day comment period when that document comes back. So we're excited to continue to move forward with that project. Wanted to let you all know and the community know we're working on plans with the Marin County Fire Department on a prescribed fire up in the San Geronimo Valley, specifically Gary Giacomini Open Space Reserve. And that'll be in the kind of in the area of the White Hill ridgeline of the preserve. And it's anticipated to be the last 2 weeks of October with the exact date to be determined. Obviously, conditions need to be right, and we'll rely on our partners with the fire department to make those calls. But just wanted to make sure that the community was aware that those plans were in the works. Also wanted to note up in Cascade Canyon Preserve, our road and trail crew is up working on the replacement of a couple of bridges, of water crossings there. To help improve the visitor safety and experience out there. And we're expecting that work to continue through mid-October. Also, we just broke ground on an accessibility improvement project at Lagoon Park. It's an accessible pathway from the parking lot to the Petonk and Dog Park there at the Civic Center campus. As with most projects, you discover some challenges right away, and we discovered immediately there was a gas line that wasn't on the map. And I believe there was a sewer line right below it. So working through those challenges, but our team is on it, and we're excited to be working on that project, and we're expecting that work to be done this fall as well. And my last note is upcoming September 20th is going to be Coastal Cleanup Day. Wanted to invite the community to join us out at several locations for a cleanup event. We'll be out at Black Point Boat Launch, which is under the Highway 37 bridge on the Petaluma River. Also, we'll be out at Hal Brown Park. We'll be at Kent Island out in Bolinas. We'll be at Lagoon Park at the Civic Center campus, and we'll be at McGinnis Park as well. So please visit our website at parks.marincounty.gov for more information. And we look forward to seeing the community out there, as you know, really it's an opportunity for us to give back and do a little bit of cleanup, put a little sweat equity into caring for this place that we get to call home. And with that, that concludes my report.
Just one follow-up question, and I'll see if others have them. In terms of the board meeting and the Bulk Gulch Environmental Review, I hope you'll reach out to them and discuss alternatives that would be examined during the process, because some said that they did want to follow up with you after that meeting.
Certainly. We'll certainly entertain that, and we have had some conversations, and we'll continue to do that. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, the only follow-up thing I had was regarding the Buck Gulch also, and I'm just curious if there's any way that we can be involved as community members to work with those community members to make sure that they know they're being heard. I think that was important when they came last time and talked, and I think it's important they know that we are hearing them.
Okay, I think maybe it's something that we can work on. There's a possibility we can set up a field trip and go out and go for a hike, and if you haven't been out there, I'd encourage you in your own time to get out there and just go experience it. But we can certainly consider that. Yeah.
Great.
Well, that brings us to item number 4.
After
did we want to have public comment? Thank you for reminding me. Public comment on the director's report. Anyone here in the audience? Seeing none, anyone in the queue?
Chair Dyett, there are no speakers in the queue.
Thank you. Chris, before we get to the next one, as a point of information, do you have the timer for those who may speak in the queue so they know the 2 to 3 minutes? I don't see our timer here. I may be missing it.
Yeah, but we can figure something out. He's got a timer. There we go.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So that brings us to item number 4, the minutes, which were attached. If there are any questions, let me know. Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
All in favor? Okay, it passes unanimously. Are there any public comments on the minutes or public comments from people in the queue?
There are no speakers in the queue.
Thank you. That brings us to item number 5. Recommendations for this coming fiscal year on the Breathe Aspira Community Draft Awards.
I'm not sure. Our number five on the agenda is
wrong.
Volunteer page.
There you go.
Yeah, you're on the. Yeah.
Well, I was fouling.
That's okay.
The wrong. Okay, now we're at the appointment of the Measure A Community Oversight Committee. And we talked, you had mentioned there is one spot available with the departure of one of our commissioners.
Yeah, that's correct. With the terming out of Commissioner O'Brien, that leaves a vacancy as part of the bylaws of the Measure A Citizen Oversight Committee. There are two appointments from your commission that serve also on that oversight committee. And that oversight committee entails two meetings per year, one meeting in February, which focuses on the kind of the financial audits, the two primary audits that we have, and kind of the fiscal kind of aspect of it. And then typically the fall meeting usually looks at kind of the year in review and how Measure A projects have been accomplished and or are in the works, just kind of highlighting some of those expenditures. So we're looking to you, your commission today, to have somebody fill that vacancy at a minimum for next month's meeting or November's meeting. And as it's agendized, looking to, for someone to fill the two-year commitment to replace that, which would end January 28th of 2028.
Unless there are objections, I think it would certainly be okay to consider the full two-year appointment, but I'd be willing to consider an executive. I think if those who aren't here had wanted to express interest, they might have told Chris in advance of their interest. And since it is an agenda item, just to keep things moving and develop that institutional knowledge that's helpful. I have served at least for one term, I've been to a number of the meetings, and as others on the committee have, and I found it a extremely rewarding and important appointment, and would consider expressions of interest.
Well, I've been on it for 6 years, and I just got off it like a year ago, so I'm very familiar with it, and my only interest is to make sure that the seat is filled. So I will say that if you have interest, I would highly encourage it. You know, I really enjoyed working with Kevin a lot. And like Chris was saying, the first part really is kind of reviewing the audits. And then the second part is the recipients, like who's getting the money and making sure that it's being spent the right way and kind of justified, make sure everything met the way the ballot initiative was written. So. Mm-hmm.
I guess it's up to you, Eric.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering whether you think we should perhaps consider just covering the first meeting. Do we just go ahead, move ahead? I would be glad to volunteer for this post, but I want to be equitable to our partners. Any thoughts, commissioners?
Well, as I said before, to repeat,
yeah,
I thought if commissioners who aren't here had wanted to express interest, that they would have expressed interest.
Yeah.
Through the chair or through the director, and I don't believe any did. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So I guess I think in the interest of moving forward, and since we already have someone who had served for many years, and
I'll call you
to do it.
Okay.
I would, if I sense a interest, I would ask you to, whether you want to put your name up and we could act on this measure.
Sure, I'll put my name in the hat here. I'd be glad to volunteer if you would like to.
I would second that recommendation and call for a vote unless there's discussion of the measure. I then call for a vote on the recommendation to appoint Erica Lovejoy to the Measure A Community Oversight Commission. This is an action item. All in favor?
Myself.
It passes unanimously. I guess we should take public comment on the appointment. Hearing, are there any members of the public that would like to comment on this appointment here today in the audience or in the queue on the Zoom?
Chair Diet, there are no speakers in the queue.
That brings us then to item number six, the update on the wildland fuels reduction program. I can throw away the old agenda and all this one.
Thank you, Chair. And yeah, so we've got three presentations for your commission lined up here. And the first of which is just an update. You know, we're in mid-September. We're kind of in the throes of wildfire season, as we've seen the last several years, and certainly even this year is no exception, the impact of wildfire throughout the state. So I wanted to provide an update to you all and give our staff an opportunity to present some of the great work that we have been doing, whether it's internally with our own staff or through our partnership. So I would invite Noah Macchia from our team to come on up, as he's going to give this presentation. And I am going to do my best to figure out how to share my screen. If you all could just bear with me. Oh, Luke's here too. I didn't see that. Sorry. So both Noah and Luke are the resource specialists on our fuels crew, and they help us navigate the kind of the planning and connect our resources with our operations crew as well as our contractors. So let me keep fighting the good fight here.
While you're doing that, I do hope you'll comment specifically on what we're doing with the Wildland Prevention Authority.
Yes, absolutely.
I didn't see them listed in the slide.
Gotcha. Yeah, we have multiple projects with the NWPA.
Great.
Oh, there we go. Okay. All right, so I'll turn it over to Luke and Noah.
All right. Good afternoon, commissioners. We just want to give a brief update on a broad level, some of our activities to help with wildfire mitigation on the open space. So a significant portion of our work is focusing, of course, on defensible space, the areas closest to homes that intersect the open space district. We have about 216 acres of defensible space that we manage. That's about 1% of the total land that we're managing. We've been on really good trajectory since we first started tracking areas that we have kind of brought into a maintenance cycle, bringing them up to kind of CAL FIRE specifications for a defensible space. Currently, we're sitting at about 83% completion. You know, this is a really good trajectory. Moving forward, we're going to be shifting a bit more focus to the maintenance of these areas, because a lot of these areas first started getting defensible space work in 2020, 2021. So we have to return to a lot of these areas. Luckily though, 60% of our remaining defensible space are actually scheduled under MWPA, that's Marin Wildfire Prevention Authority, regional fuel breaks or other such projects. So we have a really good timeline of when these things are going to be completed. You know, the last remaining acres that we have to treat under the defensible space program are going to be a bit more tricky. That's why we've left them for last, but we're certainly getting there. And this is just a kind of typical example of our defensible space work. You know, most of it is focusing on light, flashy fuels that catch fire easily, really dense pockets of fuel. This is at Pacheco Valle Preserve.
All right, so next up, I'm going to speak about our large projects. In particular, on this map here, we have the San Rafael San Anselmo Fuel Reduction Zone. It's a large-scale, multi-municipality project. We're working with the MWPA. We're working with San Rafael Fire and then other agencies throughout the county, including County Fire and our neighbors over at San Anselmo. So as you can see on the map, the open space overlaps the project area in the northern section. And in that area, maybe you've seen it, it's over in the cemetery, Tam Cemetery area behind Red Hill. It's a large eucalyptus grove. And so the project here is going through and doing a large-scale eucalyptus thinning project. So reducing the grounds and ladder fuels in the area, which will in turn reduce the wildfire risk and impact. It's also a ridgeline. So at the northern end of the project area, it's a ridgeline. So by reducing the ladder fuels, we'll reduce the risk of ember cast if a crown fire does occur. So trying to mitigate that risk. And then as we do this, we're also promoting native species by thinning out the understory and increasing species diversity and improving habitat. And some of the early results are fairly positive. So we're looking forward to that. It's been a long-term project. It started in 2023, and on the open space section, we are reaching about 60% of our desired acreage of worked area. The larger project isn't as far along, but it's working. Next slide, please. Yeah, so here's a great example. So unlike defensible space, where we're just working in a thin strip behind the homes, 100 feet, 150 feet, this is taking large swaths of land and reducing a lot of the trees. So what you see here is we've taken out the eucalyptus under 10 inches in diameter. So we leave large established trees which create habitat or provide habitat. And we also reduce the amount of ladder fuels and just the better horizontal spacing. So if a ground fire were to come through this area, there's a significantly reduced chance of it spreading to the canopy.
We work with many different contractors and multiple partners. We just wanted to highlight one of our key partnerships is with Marin County Fire. You know, Measure A helps support one of their TAM crews. That's one of their hand crews that is equipped for both wildland firefighting, suppression activities, but also project work. And so we work with them throughout their entire season on a lot of our projects. So far in 2025, we've worked on 15 different fuel reduction projects, and we have a couple more coming up. This year, it's also been a pretty big year in terms of acreage. We've been managing about 130 acres with them, with their assistance. And just to give a bit of insight into the scale that we're working in terms of how much material we're removing. It's about 600 piles that are built, during project times and then burnt in the winter and spring, which is quite a bit of work. But they certainly are one of our most important partners, and they're able to kind of provide, project planning assistance in terms of what the specifications for different projects might be, and also complete the projects.
Yeah, and then another of our partners is the Fire Foundry, which is a collaboration between County Fire and CCMB. And this is a great entry-level program for folks who are looking for on-the-job skills to get into a fire type of career. So this is a great training program that will get you potentially opportunities with the TAM crew or other fire agencies throughout the Bay Area. So currently we have 4 fuel reduction projects so far with this crew. That's included large-scale broom removal. That's also included defensible space clearing. And on these project sites, they're gaining experience working as a team, working with power tools, including chainsaws and weed whips. And they're also learning to identify invasive species and non-natives. So there's a great opportunity through some funding of our own to help with the on-the-job training, which could lead to better fuel reduction in the future.
Yeah. I also wanted to highlight kind of the backbone a lot of our work, which is monitoring and kind of the biological aspect. Without our crew of seasonal workers and biologists on staff, we really wouldn't be able to make a lot of these projects happen, not only from a compliance standpoint, as we try to meet all the local, state, and federal regulations, but also just from our kind of best management practices. We've done over 140 bird nesting surveys this year, which is a lot. That's, 140 mornings, basically. I I'm really grateful to all of our staff that assist us with this. We're doing our best to kind of maintain the native habitat that we want to maintain. And certainly our seasonal workforce is a key aspect of that.
Yeah, and then another aspect is the outreach portion of our position. And this is another area where we overlap significantly with the MWPA. They do a great job of reaching out to the community and creating opportunities for education. So as we can, here's Ember Stomp. This took place a couple of weeks ago. Any opportunity to get out and talk with the community. We've participated in field trips with MWPA, spoken at the end of Fairway Drive about the fuel reduction projects out there. We also take the time, any opportunity we get, to go to additional trainings, travel to like the East Bay Regional Parks to see how they're conducting their fuel management over there, pretty similar areas. Any opportunity we can get to talk with neighbors, we try to make ourselves as available as possible to answer questions. And I would like to invite any of you, if you do have any follow-up questions, to reach out to us directly. And we're more than happy to fill in any of the gaps that, or any of the questions you might have.
Any commissioner questions?
I just want to add a couple quick notes before we transition to commissioner comments. One, I just want to highlight, Noah mentioned early on in the presentation, we're transitioning to maintenance versus basically construction or establishment of these fuel breaks in this mm-hmm. defensible space. Mm-hmm. All of this work is essentially like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. Essentially, when you get done with the establishment of a fuel break, it requires you coming back through and servicing. It's vegetation, it's going to regrow. And in fact, in some many cases, certain shrubs will come back much thicker, much heavier, and require an intensive effort. So we are committed, and you know, in an effort to protect this community from the threat of wildfire, it is a long term commitment to protect these and manage these defensible space and these fuel breaks. And through that, I wanted to note that just in this year's Measure A operating budget. With this new version, Measure A 2.0, that we called it, that went back to the voters in 2022, there is a specific carve-out for fuels work, which in this year's budget equates to about $2.7 million. So it's a significant investment, both of the financial resources, the boots on the ground, the planning, the monitoring, and that $2.7 million doesn't even include the planning and the monitoring. That's just boots on the ground performing that fuels reduction work. So it is a significant investment, and I just think it's important for your commission, the community at large, to understand that we take this charge seriously. We have a tremendous amount of partnerships through all the, obviously, County Fire and the Wildfire Prevention Authority, but also all of the local fire jurisdictions. Defensible space goes way beyond just our open space boundaries. As we know, fire doesn't know boundaries. So that collaborative effort and approach, and then making sure that the community understands what their responsibilities are with respect to their own private property and their defensible space, their home hardening, their registering for Alert Marin, having your go bag ready to go, making sure that the evacuation routes are cleared and ready to go. I mean, it truly does take a community effort, and we are just one small piece of that puzzle. I don't think we're a small piece of that puzzle. I think it's a fairly significant chunk. But we feel like it's important for your commission and the community to kind of have a glimpse into that world of what we're doing.
Any commission comments?
Go ahead.
Eric?
I have a question. First, thank you very much for all of your hard work. It's a lot to manage, but definitely much appreciated. I'm just curious, in terms of like that communication, Chris, that you were talking about between coordinating with the fire districts and everything and relaying to the community what they need to do in their part, are you guys involved in that, or is it most, or do you just coordinate with the Marin Fire on that, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, within our program, a lot of that direct neighbor communication comes when we get requests or things like that, or if we're working in neighborhoods. Otherwise, we've kind of shifted to relying on Fire Safe Marin as our key source that we kind of push to folks, because their messaging is really more focused on what they can do on private property.
Mm-hmm.
Hope that answers.
That's helpful to hear, because it's just trying to make that connection and share with the community people like us who all live here in the community, how to handle these the defensible space on their property, and including, dealing with all the critters that we have that live in this environment with us, and being able to handle that appropriately.
And I would also add that there is, social media is a huge source for community engagement, our website, but also County Fire, MWPA, there's a lot of communications that go out through that way to try and help remind folks of the threat and our responsibilities, both sharing the successes, but also highlighting the continued need to be diligent and continue this work.
Just a question about monitoring, because you touched on monitoring for plants and wildlife that's impacted by the firework that you're doing. What, if any, monitoring do you do for fire itself?
Yeah, so we haven't had a lot of wildfire or prescribed fire on our properties. We do when there is an incident. We have people go out and we map the area, the perimeter. We map any disturbances, such as like fire lines that are dug into the ground, and then we kind of fold that into both early detection weed monitoring and photo monitoring. Sort of repeat, coming back year to year to take pictures. I think we had maybe 3 incidents last year, fairly small on our land. But so those have kind of been folded into this kind of repeat year monitoring.
I'd just like to add that we're quite fortunate in Marin County that we have so many emergency resources available that can respond. And they do respond quickly. So any fire that does take place, there's a near immediate reaction and response to that.
So then just back again to the notion of monitoring.
Yeah.
I watched too much cable TV coverage of the fires in Southern California this year. If you become aware that there's fire, you coordinate with the other emergency responders. You aren't an emergency response agency yourself, understand that. But is there any additional monitoring that you look at in terms of fire causation, or does that just fall if it's fuels, fuel reduction? But is there anything else that you're doing in terms of fire prevention?
And for incidents themselves, the fire department takes the lead on any kind of investigation. And we sit at the table when we can at incident command. But that is ultimately the responsibility of the fire department.
And just a suggestion, because again, I think people are very attuned, as you saw with the discussions about Measure A 2.0 in terms of putting more money towards fire mitigation. You might just want to think a little bit in your communications with the public about making that distinction, that you are in the prevention mode, looking at the source of fuels, not the responding mode, which might seem obvious to you. But I think sometimes the public gets a little confused about where jurisdictional boundaries are.
Absolutely.
And what the expectations are.
Absolutely.
I just have 2 follow-up specific questions. I think last time you were before us, we talked a bit about the potential for composting. And I know your slide just had the picture of the fire, and I wondered if you are doing any composting, coordinating with the nursery and others.
Yeah, we are. The biomass that we create from our projects, we don't have any facilities currently that would be able to, or I'm not sure if we have the ability to take in material ourselves. We are, as you know, in partnership with Marin Wildfire Prevention Authority. They have been looking at biomass utilization on a larger scale. And so that's something that we're keenly interested in. Otherwise, we do prefer in certain areas to burn material, depending on the type of material, because the only viable alternative we have right now is having that material hauled off to, basically waste management systems that are not really, it's not a great carbon
There are alternative uses of, and I'm glad that you're talking, because a lot of the wood products and the other things can be used. And do you coordinate at all with those managing our goat herd? Can they play a role in the?
We do assist in the management of the goat grazing. They haven't expressed any interest in any of that product. We haven't heard a lot of interest in the product, except for neighbors that want firewood. But
I thought that if you get the goat herd over to help you doing some of the fuel management.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I mean, we at this point we're using goats where we see the most benefit for them. But yeah, a lot of our projects are just not goat friendly areas. A little bit too deep in the woods.
Great. My last question is. On infill sites, there are probably some scattered infill or, private inholdings and coordinating with the city. And I wondered if you've tried to map those. Some of them may pose a risk and you're trying to get continuity in the fire break. And I wondered if you're doing anything specifically on, looking at the breaks of the inholdings.
Yeah. And, the Marin Wildfire Prevention Authority has been really helpful in that regard in being able to communicate to private inholdings or municipal inholdings, and they have all of the contacts. We've also, over the past few years, between digital, our digital mapping and just building our contacts with new fire personnel, have had a much easier time being able to work on those properties when we need to, or secure, work from other municipalities or private landowners.
And you might then look at whether there's any potential leveraging of our Measure A funds that could get something going, on a match program or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't expect the answer now, but I think that trying to leverage that funds with the cooperation of the MWPA and the locals might produce some good results in the priority areas.
Absolutely. Yeah. We absolutely try to leverage our Measure A funds with partners whenever available.
Great. Thank you very much. I would now ask for public comment on the presentation. In the audience? Yes, sir.
I don't know if this is on. Larry Minicus, Marin Conservation League. And I sit on the Citizens Oversight Committee for the MWPA. It's my fifth year, so this is near and dear to my heart, as you might imagine. In fact, their board meeting is coming up at 3, which I also need to attend.
Oh, good, Larry.
MMWD, the Marin Water District, is going aggressively at trying to move forward to prescribe burning. And they just did a very successful one near Bon Tempe, which you might be aware of. I know that's not in the planning for Marin County Parks, and there's reasons for that. But in the future, as we move these programs forward, it would be useful to look at prescribed burning as a tool, because these are fire-dependent ecosystems. And the way to bring back health is to put fire back on the landscape. Now, that's not always possible, especially in the built environment. But the work that's going on, what that does is it makes it easier for staff to come back later, once you've done your clearing, to actually do prescribed burn, because you just can't go in there and start lighting things up. And a good example of the kind of work that's being done, where you can see from the street, is if you just drive down here, it's China Camp. So it's not Marin County Parks, but they are aggressively doing a lot of work there. I was just there yesterday, and I think I heard about a dozen chainsaws going near the campgrounds. And all of a sudden, you can see the campgrounds from the trail, and you never could before. But they've done almost the entire section there and the entire back section. They've done a burn above, last year, was it? Above Peacock Gap. But it's just really informative to see what it looks like and how it looks after a burn and such. And they're doing all the piles right now. There's large piles out there. It's just good to see. It's good education. And I just wanted to leave it at that I hope in future planning, we're considering working with the MWPA and with CAL FIRE and Marin County Fire, and perhaps putting fire back on the landscape at some point.
All right, that's an excellent point. Thank you very much for bringing it to our attention and
Absolutely.
To staff.
Thank you.
And I know back in the 70s, I was working in Santa Barbara County, and we were trying to get more of that done on the Santa Barbara front. And it's a very powerful tool. You don't have to respond, just think about it. Are there any other public comments in the audience today? Turning to the queue, do we have any comments?
As a reminder for the attendees in Zoom, please use the raise hand function and I can unmute you. Chair Diet, there are no speakers in the queue.
Thank you.
Before we move on, I would like to respond to that public comment. I don't know, Larry, if you were here during my director's report, but we actually do have plans for prescribed fire out in Giacomini, which will be hopefully late in the latter half of October. You're right, it is relatively new to us. We are excited about the opportunity, but we certainly appreciate the comment.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't meant as a criticism.
No, for sure. We're not taken.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for the clarification. That's good news. Let's see. We're now to item 7. This is exciting. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. Very good. Very good presentation.
All right. The next presentation is about Civic Center Campus. I know this is the Parks and Open Space Commission, so a lot of the work is going to focus around Lagoon Park, but it really is the broader campus. And with me today to present is Tara McIntyre, Principal Landscape Architect with our team. And again, I am going to navigate the lovely challenge of sharing screen. Let's see how it goes.
Oh, and Tara, do tell us all the species, too. I want to know all the species we're going to be seeing on the slides.
Species? I wish we were talking about birds, because then we could just go.
No, the plant species.
Plant. Oh. That might be another presentation.
Oh,
I guarantee that will be.
We've
another
got some great pictures there. I love that.
Going.
The planter replacements down and down everything.
All right. Oh, it is a little delayed. Well, I'm delayed, so that's good. Okay. Good morning, Commissioner. Oh, good morning. This is how my day's going.
Good afternoon,
Commissioners. Yes, Tara McIntyre, lead the. Projects and design team, I'm a landscape architect by training. And so I'm here today really excited to talk about kind of the Civic Center projects that are happening. And I guess I want to cue it up with just saying that the Civic Center campus it's historic. It's something, it's the hub. It's a beloved landscape, both because of the Frank Lloyd Wright building, but also the campus itself. I think most people think of like Lagoon Park, but it's really an 80-acre unifying site, and it's beautiful. I mean, you go out there, you see people walking around the lagoon. People are going to pay their taxes or they're going to work. There's something happening there all the time. And what probably a lot of people don't know that Marin County Parks is one of the key teams that take care of that campus. And we have a staff that's out there weed whipping and mowing and cleaning up and fixing. And so there's a lot of activity out there. So it's also even bigger than that, is that there's public works, there's cultural services. So there's a lot of people involved on this campus. And the thing that's really exciting is that we have a new county executive, and we have Chris and Chris Blunk. Christopher Blunk he's the acting deputy or director of public works. And Steve Dowd, who's now the cultural services director, that the importance of this campus is really being recognized. And the fact that it has been kind of overlooked for many years and sort of a lot of band-aids on this campus. And so this kind of renewed focus on this campus to really bring it back into its grandeur and glory and really make it something that the Marin residents are proud of and that they can come and enjoy. So with that, this is just an overview, and we're gonna walk through. So the red dots on the screen are sort of the projects that we'll highlight, but the list down the side is really just to give you an idea of like all the work that's happening on this campus. And the thing that is really exciting too is kind of when I mentioned cultural services, DPW and parks, and the county executive, is the fact that we're really working together. And this isn't a lone effort. Parks is just down doing their work and DPW is doing their work. It's like we sit around a table or in a Zoom room with a bunch of people and we talk about how are these projects
moving forward? Where are they in the process? How can we work together? What's the information we have to share? How can we support each other? So I think I just want to make that as the stage of like, this isn't just a parks effort. It's a group effort. And so that's what we'll start with. So here we go. So the first thing we'll talk about is the South Archway. And this is the directions always confuse me, but this is the most upper archway of folks, probably the main with the beautiful staircase that takes you an elevator or escalator takes you up into the building. And this is just a little project, but this was redesigned probably 15 years ago for safety of pedestrians crossing the roadway here. And these planters were put in as barriers to help kind of protect people. Well, as you can see, they're cracked. You can see marks where the cars have hit them, or they're empty because they've been broken. And so this effort is to, first step is to kind of look at safety. We've talked to DPW and traffic engineers to understand like, what can we do to make this not a maintenance nightmare for our own staff and also improve the safety of this area. So we're looking at increasing the size of these planters, planting them with new plants, and trying to really make this, because this is probably the most entered spot in the whole campus, like in terms of accessing the building. And with everything that's done with this building, it's done with the conservancy's overview. There's a special conservancy, if you're not aware, that kind of makes sure that the building architecture and design is kept consistent, but also understands that things change. So this is one project that we're involved with again, DPW and the Conservancy. I might go slow. This is a project that we completed. This was back last spring, I think this early winter. The fountain was a long maintenance problem. DPW maintains the fountain, and it didn't have any planting, and the planting sort of, it was just looked very barren. And again, with our new county executive, he was really excited to like, this is the entryway to the Civic Center. And so we planted this with natives. We're really trying to, and we work closely with California Native Plant Society and the local chapter. And it's really important to them and to us to see how can we work natives into our landscapes. And it's also very challenging when you're thinking of a commercial, this is a big campus. And so maintenance is something that we're very aware of. So trying to find that balance. So this is a newly planted landscape, and it's a little past its prime, but it's still looking good. And Chris mentioned this in his report. This project is the dog park. In these photos that you can see, we're looking at a major rain event. And but I'll pause there. Just one thing I want to say about this project, and in light of the Civic Center campus, you know, one of the most important parts of this campus is that we have access for people, and it's written into the design guidelines, and it's something that we at Parks are very much mindful of, as making sure that our sites and projects and parks are accessible. And this has been on the books for a long time, where we have a very popular dog park and a very popular batonk court that have a very dedicated group of people, but nobody can get to it. If you are in a wheelchair or you are have mobility challenges, you can't get to it. And you can definitely not get to it in the winter when it's raining. And so there's major drainage problems. And so right now, as Chris mentioned, if you drove by on your way out of here and peeked over, you will see there's large holes in the ground. And so we're working quickly to get ahead of that scene at the bottom to get a new concrete 200 foot long, 8 foot wide concrete accessible pathway to the dog park. And we're also addressing the drainage to the degree that we can possibly, or that we can. And you'll see a plan here that shows the new pathway and making sure, you know, again, with ADA in mind on everything that we do. So new parking area, new gates, and then also the drainage. And hopefully you'll see that done before at the end of October. That's our goal. Fingers crossed. Lagoon Restroom. So this is another, I have to say, it's one of our most popular sites on the campus. And you can see we have portable restrooms that have to support this. It's almost 30 years old. And it is completely undersized. Our staff is constantly fixing it and repairing it. And there's no storage. There's no ADA changing tables or baby changing tables. And so we're looking actively to work on designs right now to increase not only the size, but the location. And we just returned from the Conservancy yesterday and presented to them on these proposed locations. So you can see the existing there on the south or the bottom of the image on the right. And then the potential new location, which is north of the playground, but again, still in the same realm. And it's improving the views to the Cascades, which I'll talk about here in a moment. And then also moving it closer to the fairground entry. It's a flat location. We'll be able to keep the restroom open that's existing while we build or put in a prefab. Again, we're still in design. Right now, we're just understanding the site so we can understand that the next phase will be really developing what the structure looks like and really digging into the grading and sort of like the actual detailing of this. And these are just some concept designs that we've worked through with our consultant about potential locations. And again, this is sort of like the things that we're talking about is like, are they single use? Are they a normal restroom where it's a sexed restroom, but then we have a family restroom and then we have maintenance. So these are, again, these are things that we're going to keep and we'll be back. All right, next project is the Cascades. So right next door, and you probably haven't seen it actively working in years, right? It's been a long time. And this is probably one of the most iconic, beautiful features of the campus. And so it has been dysfunctional because the pumps, our staff is constantly trying to fix things and they do a great job keeping things together, but it's very aged. And so what we're doing right now is working to develop very close. I think we're at 99% construction documents or finishing up the last pieces to install new pumps, new UV sterilizers. So the water will actually be treated. We looked into a recirculating system and that was not possible. We explored all kinds of options to make this a viable system that will be easy to maintain because this is something that will be maintained by DPW. So we're working hand in hand with them. We've also talked to the Conservancy because again, there's visual issues in terms of, we're moving the pump. The pump was in a pit and now it's going to be above ground. And you'll see, so on this slide, you'll notice like the existing pump and equipment is all kind of scattered about. There's random boxes and electrical panels and, you probably wouldn't see them until now that I pointed this out, you'll see them. You're like, what's that box? What's that big brown thing? And so we're really trying to clean up some of the miscellaneous utilities, consolidate them and move them into a different location. And so this is, it's going to be in an enclosure. We have an opportunity. Cultural Services has expressed an interest in, and as our county executive, really promoting art and murals on campus. You've probably seen the big storage units on 101 that face the highway. That's a new mural that was done by Cultural Services. So again, this is a partnership. How can we make this blend in? Nobody likes to see equipment faults, but how can you make it work? So through landscape, murals, and this pump system will be easily accessible and everybody's excited to get those fountains turned back on. Plus, they'll have lights in them that change colors. So that's going to be really exciting with the seasons. This is a small project, but again, we just awarded it to a landscape company. If you've walked around the lagoon for many years, you probably noticed a lot of trees have died over time. There used to be beautiful willows, and we've lost a lot of trees, which is like you can see from that photo. So this next you'll be seeing, and as again, we have timed things by winter seasons, and hopefully it rains, but we're putting in some upgrading some irrigation. We're also really working on consolidating our tree plantings and making it easier to maintain. Planting single trees in turf is not easy to maintain. So we're really trying to establish groupings of trees and making mulched areas. It's easier to irrigate. And then also adding more native trees. And so we're really trying to push, how can we make our landscapes more lasting and sustainable. Also, kind of on the light piece, the aerators and the fountains that are out in the lagoon themselves, they are also getting a little bit of a facelift, and they've been replaced. And one actually just broke recently that is getting replaced. And these two will also have color and lights. So again, it's just fixing things that we've been holding together with Band-Aids for many years and trying to get the campus back up in tip-top shape. This project is actually complete. This was at the jail entry. Hopefully you haven't had to go in the jail, but you walk by it when you come into the Civic Center. And, I think the thing about the jail is really cool. You don't see it, and it disappears into the landscape, but the entryway is really beautiful. I mean, there's this, it should be welcoming. And I mean, it's not someplace you want to go, but it's important to make it look really nice. And this was a volunteer effort led by our volunteer coordination team. And we had students come out, and there was our own staff designed a planting plan for this, all California natives. And the students, they all put this in over the course of, I think, a week. New soil, new irrigation. And the photo at the bottom right is it in bloom, and it's doing pretty well. And then even inside the building, we are we maintain that. So if you didn't know that, our own staff maintain the plantings inside the Civic Center, all those beautiful tropical delights. And we had an irrigation and water leak. And so we lost an entire planter of plants. And you can see the existing on the right and before on the left, that's what it did look like. And so that's something, again, we're working with DPW and trying to get this reestablished and replanted. So, and don't ask me about tropical plants, because I definitely won't know them. They don't teach us that in school, but we're learning. And then these are just a few projects that you saw that list on that first page, is that we may not be leading all of those projects, but we are absolutely part of those projects. And so the one of the things you probably all saw in the news or in the paper, the new farmers market was approved, and those plans are moving forward. And as part of that, like on the upper left-hand side, is how can there be a new connection? And this is something that's in development, potential new connection from the farmers market to the campus, improving the entire sort of boulevard all the way up Peter Bear Drive to the Civic Center, both the South Arch and the Center Arch. And again, we maintain these landscapes, so it's really important that we're part of that process and how to, helping to select trees, helping to make sure that is something that we can maintain successfully. And then there's also the green stormwater infrastructure. It's not a very exciting photo, but on the bottom left, we have to treat the water that comes off of all these parking lots. And so this is a project that's also being led by Mix Stop. And that is something that we too are also involved in and collaborating with them on, to make sure that, again, we can maintain it. How can we make it successful and do it together? The lighting, that's another project that DPW is actually leading on the campus, both for safety and for, well, that's the primary is for safety, but those lights are also very old. So they're trying to make, you probably saw a lot of the new lights that went in at the new Performing Arts of VMA Center. And that's kind of was the first sort of step forward. And then on the main campus, that is the next step. The popcorn lights that go around the lagoon, that is also another project where it's the close the gap, very much kind of like the Emerald Necklace in Boston. It's like, how can we close that gap around the lagoon? Because everybody loves to walk around that lagoon. Mm-hmm. That is probably, I mean, you could count people all day just making laps. And so that's another project that Parks is also involved with. And then additionally, the VMA Fairgrounds, we also help maintain that. And we work with cultural services to keep that campus up to date. And so that's just a purview. Just, you know, I don't think a lot of people maybe know how much involvement we have. It's not just our parks. I mean, Lagoon Park is one of our parks, but it's the campus as well. So that's we'll be back to talk about some, especially the restroom. And hopefully we'll be able to report back with a video of the operating cascades here before the end of next season, and here for any questions.
Excellent. Thank you very much. We have commission questions, please.
Yeah, so does that, the lagoon that you're redoing, the stepping ponds, does that play any function in the aeration of the...
Yeah,
other than the fountains, the cascading part.
In terms of the total health of the lagoon, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, and that was one of the things that we, you know, it's learned a lot about how the water, like, there's certain aspects of that where the water comes in and how it aerates through. Yes, it's a really critical piece to that lagoon, and it absolutely helps. To have
that seems like that's going to improve the vitality of that pond significantly.
It's that in conjunction with the aerators and the fountains that are in the middle of the lagoon.
And why were the trees dying?
Well, willows, a lot of them were willows,
uh-huh.
and those have a very short lifespan.
Okay.
They are. They're not supposed to, those willows aren't supposed to be here.
Okay.
Those were, no, but they're beautiful and everybody loves them, but they're very, very short-lived trees.
There were a lot of Monterey pines as well
that
died out as well.
It seems like you have a shallow water table there with a lot of salinity, so you're probably limited to what you could grow there.
You know, a lot of trees do really well, so we're kind of taking that, you know, seeing what works and keep planting that. And then I think it's also really important to start introducing trees because the climate's changing, climate's getting warmer, and there's the opportunity and to see how things perform. And I mean, you could plan all you want. You think that's going to be the perfect tree in that perfect spot, and it may not work. I mean, that's, and you, so, but we.
And these are mostly natives that you're planting back in?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I can get you that plant list, but that's the right. Majority of them are natives.
Good.
Majority.
Nice. That's it.
That's great. Thank you for the presentation. Really appreciate this update. And it's very informative to me. I haven't personally spent a lot of time in that campus, and now I'm going to go walk around it and take a good look. I am curious what the process is for how you procure art. You were talking about having art, murals, things like that. How do you obtain the art?
Well, I can tell you that will be in cultural services' hands, and just because that's their expertise, and they work with a lot of artists, and I think that's for this project specifically, for like the above ground enclosure. I think how we're going to handle it is they're excited about it, and so I think they're going to work in terms of the whole campus. How does that get integrated? And so we're not doing that directly. That will be kind of handing the baton to cultural services again as a group effort.
Okay. I just think it's really wonderful to have more community art, and so I encourage them, everybody, to promote that as much as possible, because it really I mean, obviously we have a beautiful space with the whole Civic Center. It's very unique, and but increasing the amount of art and diversity of artists and would just be a wonderful thing. The other thing I was wondering about is if there's going to be perhaps an increase in the number of gathering areas for people, like seating areas, because I know I see part of the designs. I know there's some things for sports or, you know, walking the dog, et cetera. But one of the things that I always love to see integrated a little more into American public spaces is that, like, the central gathering spots. And maybe I just don't know where that is, or if there's more plans for, maybe it's there already, or maybe there's plans for more areas where people to get can gather and.
So this place is like the ultimate gathering spot, particularly when the county fair rolls through. Mm-hmm. But also there is an existing picnic area. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, certainly clamoring for upgrades, and it's got, you know, it's in a grove of, you know, less than stellar pines. There are some really nice oaks in there, but we do need to get in there and do a surface treatment, mitigate all the trip hazards, get some new seats in there, new benches in there. It certainly is one of those items that needs to be addressed. And as you can see by the presentation, there's a lot going on, and it's just going to take time to get there. We could focus all of our time and resources solely on the Civic Center campus, but we've got, you know, regional mm-hmm. parks. We've got 35 regional parks, pathways, and smaller pocket facilities that we've got to maintain. So it certainly is a delicate balance of how much time and energy can we focus here at Lagoon Park and on this campus, you know, while balancing the needs of all of the other regional parks as well.
Short question, hopefully. You touched on aeration of the lagoons for Lagoon Health. What happened to the floating islands? Are they still out there, or if not, what happened to them?
So the floating islands were put out there kind of as in partnership with the Galenas Watershed Alliance, or Watershed Council. And they, a couple of them, I mean, they were really, it was more of a pilot program. They put a couple of them in, they broke free from their anchors and drifted over to the weir, had to be removed. And they, you know, the intention is for bioremediation. I think it's, you know, there is some benefit to it, but really I think from our perspective, they're difficult to maintain and stay on top of. We don't have the ability to get out into the lagoon. You know, we don't have boat. We don't have the ability to go out and manage that. But as Tara showed in her presentation, a lot of that green infrastructure, the bioretention basins and the biofiltration that will capture the water coming off of the parking lots and filter it before it gets into the lagoon. You know, we feel like there's a significant plan in place, and we're going to start to see that being implemented over the next several years. That is going to really help us, in addition to obviously making sure that all three of the floating fountains are working and the cascade fountains are working so that we can keep that water moving. So collectively, and then there certainly continues to be an interest from the Watershed Council on doing something out there. It's just, from our perspective, it's understanding the maintenance obligation and burden that comes with that, versus the return on the investment there, and then navigating these other projects that are going on as well. So we do have an ongoing conversation with them about potentially doing some more work out there. But again, it's a, you know, it's a matter of how we work that into the program.
That's one of those, you had great interpretive signage up explaining this. It sounded like a really cool project. And so I think for a number of us that used the Lagoon Park, it was like, wow, this seems really cool. What happened to the island? So that was the reason for the question.
I just have a few follow-up technical questions.
No, I just want to make sure you go to public comment.
I'll do that if I may. Just on a broader issue, is there a formal campus master plan document, and do we have a role in looking that over? You can just nod and you know, because that would be good to do, because I'm concerned that some of these things you say, well, oh, community services handling public art, but I'd be interested to see what the planning document itself says about that, says about the tree planting and these other things.
Yeah, and there is. There's a Marin County Civic Center master plan guidelines, which was prepared in 2005.
Okay.
That's the latest document. Happy to share that with all of you. It's prepared by an architecture firm with a landscape architecture firm, and that is the guiding document.
Who were the two firms?
It was Royston Hanamoto Alley and Abbey was the landscape architecture firm, and then Mark
Cavanero.
Thank you.
So those are two excellent people, but I think it'd be useful, you know, something's 20 years old, to at least send us a link, and it might be good to see whether that, as a formal document, might be worth to look at. You had two excellent firms doing it, but things have changed in 20 years. You touched on a few things.
And it's still very relevant, and the way that it was written is very much guidelines, and it recognizes that there is future change and how to sort of navigate that. We also have the Conservancy that is still active, and so there's definitely a lot of checks and balances, but it's a great document.
There is a trend, though, in planning to move from guidelines to, in some cases, what we call objective standards, and to be a little more specific about things. So I just leave you with that to come back. And I'm secondly wondering whether you're really doing outreach to our nursery team and having them involved in the plant selection and development.
Wrote them yesterday.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, because we're one of the things that we're we had been talking about is like, how can we do short term sort of like, because there are all those projects that you saw on there, they take a while to get off the ground, right?
Absolutely.
You know, and so what can we do in the interim? And so we just talked to our nursery, Asia, about how can we seed the campus with native wildflowers, poppies. So maybe hopefully next spring, this winter, you'll see the campus. It's like, what can we do short term to lift and elevate the campus while we're trying to plan these longer.
And you may get more mileage over the long run by doing more 15-gallon than 24 or 36-inch mm-hmm. box, because certainly the work has shown that, you know, over a longer run, going in with this many smaller plants
Absolutely.
Will provide greater. But the last thing I would just say, you know, I think there's a real opportunity here to continue the kind of outreach and training with young people on the overall maintenance. And again, you might, when you make another presentation, talk specifically about how we're doing that kind of training and outreach, because that's such an important skill development that I think would be there. And I think that if you do come back with a master plan touching on the issue that Erica raised on art, because you want some consistency and what's the approval, and well, you know, community service may have their own ideas, they may not necessarily be consistent with what Mark Cavanero had laid out in terms of some of the overall vision that had been done. Back to you.
Well, I have to say, you stole most of my thunder. My question had a lot to do with what you answered. But I would say for me, it's kind of a new awareness to me that we have so much involvement with the campus. And I think what would be good for me, and also hopefully my other board members here, commissioners, what is a delineation between our responsibility on the campus versus public works and maintenance and things like that? So we're not taking care of the roof or sewer lines, things like that. But what are we responsible for in addition to the lagoon park? What about the rest of the campus? So you say there's, what, 80 acres altogether or something like this, the whole place? So
like back there.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's the other parts that we don't see, like the other back parking lots and the areas that are kind of neglected and along the freeway and all those things. So are those part of our responsibility for you?
Commissioner, that's an outstanding question.
Okay.
And I smile because it's something that we as a county organization have lacked that clarity on. I joined the county back in the late 90s, and the lack of ownership and investment in the Civic Center campus, you know, really points back to the lack of clarity of roles and responsibilities. It was a you touch it, you own it mentality mm-hmm. that never came with resources to support it.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to pull resources from another source to come in and accomplish something. So we have been working. We've assembled the Civic Center Campus Working Group that consists of those three departments, Cultural Services, Public Works, and Marin County Parks. in partnership with the Office of the County Executive and Supervisor Mary Sackett's office, because it's here in her district. And that group has been charged with A, prioritizing and establishing a list of projects and getting things done, much of which you just heard about, but B, also establishing a memorandum of understanding of the definition of those roles and responsibilities, so that you know, long after I'm gone, or the Department of Public Works director is gone, or the Cultural Services director is gone, there is clear understanding of who does what, and that if that comes with funding, that's why we had the Office of the County Executive involved. The budget manager has been a part of this conversation for the last couple of years, because it comes with a need for investment and a need for commitment of resources. Otherwise, we'd be perpetually in that state of, we're not doing it because we don't have the funding to cover it. So we've made huge gains. I just want to give a shout out to our superintendent, Ari Golan, who's been kind of leading the charge from our team, helping to assemble that. And we're going to be going forward to the Board of Supervisors in November, giving probably a scaled down version of this presentation, just to make the board aware of kind of the goings ons, as well as updating them on that memorandum of understanding.
Yeah. Just to follow up, I think that's an excellent idea, and it may be that you fold it into being an addendum final chapter to the master plan, and then have some formal process, because usually when we do master plans elsewhere for these kinds of institutional or, you know, civic centers, you'd have that kind of document with a clear implementation program. Who's responsible for what? What are the timelines? And having that formalized, so you'd come back to the board not only with the memorandum, but showing that it's consistent with the vision that's been updated of what Mark and RHA did. I think that's an excellent idea, and encourage you to think about how you might have that protocol folded into a more formal document.
Appreciate it.
Unless there are other comments, I'll ask for public comment on this item. Hearing none in the audience, I would ask, are there any in the queue?
Chair Dyett, there are no speakers in the queue.
Okay, that brings us to Chicken Ranch.
Chicken Ranch. Chicken Ranch Beach. All right.
Thank you, Tara. Very much, Tara, by the way.
Yeah, that was informative.
That was very good.
All right. So the third and final presentation today is regarding a restoration project currently underway out at the beloved Chicken Ranch Beach, out just north of Inverness. And here to present today is Craig Richardson from our team, to present about this partnership and this project. And I am now officially becoming a master at screen sharing on Zoom, so it should be rather expeditious this going.
Awesome. Well, good afternoon, commissioners. As Chris said, I'm Craig Richardson. I'm a senior planner with our Planning, Real Property, and Government Affairs group. And I'm excited to share with you this update on the Chicken Ranch Beach Wetland Enhancement Project. It's actually a project that's being led and implemented by the Tomales Bay Watershed Council Foundation. But we obviously are partners in the project, and it's directly adjacent to our Chicken Ranch Beach. So happy to provide you with this update and give you kind of an overview. So I want to give you a little bit of background on the project, sort of its origin. I'll share with you some of the details about what it is that they're doing out there. And then we'll review some of the funding.
Could you also, as background, just tell us more about this foundation itself?
I can try. Yeah. I'll wrap things up by reviewing the details regarding the funding, and then give you kind of a status update on where the construction is at. So the Tomales Bay Watershed Council Foundation is a volunteer-led community organization out there on Tomales Bay. And they're, I don't have their mission memorized, but essentially they're stewards of the bay, right? So their history is centered around volunteers that are looking to protect water quality. They want to protect habitat, all of it related to Tomales Bay. Does that give you kind of the overview you were looking for?
A freestanding nonprofit, then.
Yeah, correct. That's right. Yeah. Thank you. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have assumed that everyone knows what Tomales Bay Watershed.
I just pulled it up real quick to see on the web, and Tomales Bay Foundation develops collaborative stewardship and educational projects that protect, monitor, and enhance the Tomales Bay ecosystem, its watershed, and its communities.
Nice.
When were they formed?
Really?
Yeah, it was a test. As, you know, I've been embedded with them for years now as a representative of parks, so I just assume that everybody knows. But
That's enough.
They've been established.
Yes. Okay. So for starters, for anyone who's watching who doesn't know, Chicken Ranch Beach is located, of course, on Tomales Bay, as we've established. It's there towards the southern half. It's just off of Sir Francis Drake Boulevard, and we manage the beach as a county park.
2004. When they were established.
The beach itself is beloved by many. There are regular swimmers out there, and it sees a lot of traffic during the summers. So I'll talk a little bit about the background on the project. If you're not familiar with Chicken Ranch Beach, there's a lot of history there. At the site itself, there has been ongoing water quality issue. There's something that's referred to as Channel B, which runs along the northern edge of the property, and I'll have a map of that in a moment. But suffice to say, there have been high bacterial counts for many, many years, and that's led to that portion of the beach being closed year-round by the county. And the county goes out there on an annual basis, on a monthly basis during certain times of the year, and does regular testing to confirm that, in fact, the bacterial counts are exceeding. And so the Tomales Bay Watershed Council Foundation came to us about this iteration of the project back in 2016. They've been working to do something out here. They've wanted to do something to remediate the water quality issue for longer than that. I'll talk a little bit about the history of the channel, and it started back in the late 90s. But they came to us with this iteration in 2016. We entered into a memorandum of agreement with them in 2017, I think it was. It outlined our roles and responsibilities. It's a Tomales Bay Watershed Council Foundation project, and so they took the reins at doing the fundraising. We, as the county, agreed to be partners in the effort and provide the support where we could in terms of helping them with obtaining grant funding. We also have agreed to be the CEQA lead agency, and ultimately we agreed to obtain a lease from the State Lands Commission over the parcel on which the project is taking place. So about 97% of the project, that's a rough number, exists on a State Lands Commission parcel. It's a very small part actually touches our parcel. You'll see that here in a moment. And so the reason for that is State Lands Commission, of course, does not have a management wing. And despite the fact that the project should manage itself, it's going to be a wetland. If there is any management effort that's needed, we've said that we'll step in and take care of that. And of course, the primary objectives of the project are to mitigate that poor water quality, but then also to enhance wetland habitat. So now on your screen, you see a map of the area. In the middle there, there's a faint black line, if you can see it, that outlines the State Lands Commission parcel on which the project takes place. You can see the Marin County Parks label there to the right. That's our beach. And then there are a couple of private properties to the west and to the north. Channel B runs along the northern edge of the property. Back in the late 90s, the former owner of what's now the Weltman property apparently dug the channel in the dark of the night to relieve his property of flooding. And the community was not happy the next morning and showed up, and the sheriff came out. And you can read the Point Reyes Light news articles on it. It was quite the moment in the community. Ever since then, the community has been trying to right that wrong. And what it resulted in, as I said, is water pools during the summer months. And when it pools and it heats up, that's when the high bacterial counts occur. The county has run several tests to try to determine the source of the bacteria and has not been successful. The only thing we've determined conclusively is that it's not human. It's not from a human source. And so the current thinking amongst regulators is that perhaps there's a colony in the soil itself that gets activated on an annual basis. So
Chicken Ranch.
What's that? Yeah, right. Well, I know that that seems like it could be a that could be it. But anyhow, so then along the bottom, I'll just point out that along the bottom of the screen, there's Third Valley Creek. And so we're going to look in a moment at what they're proposing to do. But eventually the wetland will connect with that channel. This just gives you a sense of what the topography looks like. On the right hand side, you can see the relief. That's just a straight channel that was a man-made dugout channel. All right, so this is what they are out there building as we speak. You can see in the proposed condition, they're gonna turn that straightened channel into a meandering wetland that'll have a nice width to it, and we'll have these shallow pools along the way for the water to stop and infiltrate, hopefully, and get filtered out by the soil before then eventually joining back up with Third Valley Creek. All of the green areas are going to be planted. The new channel will provide, a good setting for wetland plants and animals. You can also see that they're going to beneficially reuse some of the soil and have it migrate onto Chicken Ranch Beach. And that's going to be a pretty subtle elevation change. They're going to cap it with a really thick layer of sand. And what that'll do is, as sea level rises, of course, it's going to result in additional beach area, hopefully, that will be available for park users in the future.
Where does that come from?
It's all on site. So where they're digging out the channel, they're going to take it and, you know, put it on the beach and then cap it with the sand that was there previously. And I didn't point this out, but the site that they're working on is actually the spoils from a telecommunication line that was dug back in the early 1900s through the bay.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, it was a wetland.
It has all kinds of creosotes from all the holes and everything.
I don't know if there were poles.
Through the bay, under the bay.
Oh, yeah, it was actually dredging.
Cable.
Right, okay. Yeah. Okay, so this just gives you, again, a sense of the topography of the new channel as compared to the old. You can see that what's being proposed or what's being constructed is a much more natural-looking wetland. And now you've got some images of progress. This presentation was due a week ago, and so these images are from, I think, the week prior, and a lot has changed since then. But this just gives you a sense of kind of the scope of the project. I'll just point to that image in the upper right. You can see if anyone who is familiar with Chicken Ranch Beach can see that there was a lot of vegetation removed. There was a lot of invasive acacia along Third Valley Creek, which is the channel that you can see in the upper left running diagonal of the image. That's been removed, and that's going to be replaced by willows and other riparian plants. Shrubs and trees. And then the other thing I'll point out is that along the right-hand side of the screen of that upper right image, you can see the former channel B. And then next, I've just got a flyover to play you because it's kind of fun. But this gives you a good overview of the site in general.
Just a shameless plug, that bridge there on the left-hand side that you cross to access the beach.
Yeah.
In my early days with Marin County, that I had the luxury or the pleasure of building that bridge with a couple of fellow rangers. So
that's pretty cool.
All right. Oh, it's going to replay it. Okay. All right. So this is a multi-benefit project, which is really cool. You know, there is, of course, the mitigating the water quality issue that we'll see from the project. But then it's also going to be creating some wetland habitat for these rare and threatened species that you see here on the screen. And then a final benefit will be that it will improve the park user experience. I mean, it's going to go from being a mound of weedy plants to this, what I think is going to be a beautiful wetland channel. And lastly, I will just to talk about some of the details on the funding. So Tamales Bay Watershed Council Foundation was successful in receiving a $375,000 grant from the California Coastal Conservancy. They got $750,000 from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and $80,000 from Marin County Park. And all of that was going towards the construction of the project. And then finally, to summarize the Marin County Park's role, we were the CEQA lead agency. Of course, we're a project proponent, and we have agreed to passively manage the site for the next 20 years. As far as an update on construction currently, they are actually ahead of schedule. They're hoping to wrap up the active construction on the site here in 2 or 3 weeks. And so what that means is that currently their staging area is taking up about half of the parking that's available along Sir Francis Drake for the public. That's going to be out of there in 2 or 3 weeks, and folks will be able to park again. And then between October 15th and December 31st, the Tomales Bay Watershed Council Foundation, in conjunction with Spawn, who is growing the plants for them, will then be planting the site for the winter. And I think that at that point in time, for folks who are interested, there will probably be some volunteer opportunities to help in that planting effort.
Just a quickie. And all the money's secure. We're not subject to any holdbacks from the feds or anything. It's all in the bank.
Right. Yeah. It's all been secured. Yeah. They are wrapping up construction essentially. In 2 weeks or so, they'll probably be out of there. And that concludes my presentation.
Commissioner Cameron?
Yeah, I'm familiar with that place. So you got $1.2 million and it only cost us $80,000. With that,
yeah,
that's great.
Pretty good ROI. Yeah,
yeah, I like that. And I'll say I really love the site out there. I know my own personal experience is that I find that parking always kind of challenged because it's on the shoulder there, and it seems like there's no good way to delineate where you're on the road or in the ditch, and it seems like that's something that probably has a impact on the biggest impact on it is the people coming and going. And I also know like the location of the trash, picnic areas, and the other big thing is there was a lot of shade out there. So hopefully these new things will, because that was nice. You could be in the sun, you can be in the shade, kind of go back and forth. So When I picture that place, I don't really think of the beach part being too much. I think of like the part from the street to the beach was always kind of nasty. Yeah. And I'm hoping this is going to turn that around.
Yeah.
Yeah, this project isn't really going to address certainly not going to address the parking. Mm-hmm. The parking is going to continue to be a struggle out there just sheerly because of the location and the constraints of right of way. The portable restroom with the windscreen and the pathway down to that bridge and out onto the park, all of that's going to remain the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's, you know, something that, you know, we've had conversations with the countywide ADA accessibility manager, mm-hmm. to explore potential path of travel and parking, ADA parking out there, as a potential project down the line. So that those conversations are happening.
Okay.
But it's certainly not going to be addressed as part of this project.
Okay.
Thanks for the update. It's a great project. I am very curious about the situation with the bacteria levels. If it's been identified that it's not human related, which I find a little bit surprising. Mm-hmm. What are the thoughts on how this project will change the bacteria levels if it's perhaps coming from the soil, which may be reused there? Do you think the wetland conditions will change that? Or
yeah, so that's a great question. So in the testing that was done, they were able to determine like an extent of the contamination, and it was within that channel B that's now being filled in. And so the new channel, it's possible that there will still be some bacteria because it may be some in the soil elsewhere. However, the way that it's going to be constructed, it's going to be designed to infiltrate into the soil, and hopefully that will help with the cleansing. But more importantly, the area itself is that the project is occurring is currently was previously fenced, and it will be fenced in the future by a split rail fence that's a appropriate to the aesthetic, and that will keep folks away from it. Whereas previously the channel was just there alongside the beach, and kids just couldn't help but go and play in the pools.
And our partners in environmental health are very interested. We'll continue to do testing, and I think there's a lot to learn here about the value of a wetland and its ability to help resolve or mitigate challenging conditions like this. So it'll be interesting to learn. I think that there's a lot to learn, and I'm excited to see, this project come to completion. And I just want to acknowledge, Craig and his his efforts to partner and work with the Tumalos Bay Watershed Council. You know, this has been a long time coming, tremendous efforts. And I'd like to acknowledge Supervisor Redoni and his efforts and commitment to this project, because there was a lot of questions out there. There was a lot of assumptions around septic issues and, you know, old cattle ranches and a lot of just sheer guessing and trying to figure out what was going on out there. And I think that we went through the high level phylo chip testing and we went through some crazy stuff to try and figure out the what was going on out there. And the reality is, I think through this wetland restoration, we're going to see how the environment can heal itself through this type of a restoration.
Yeah, that's great. I can't wait to see.
Yeah, I would just add that there was an acknowledgement at the beginning of the project that while we may not be able to, we don't know for certain if we're going to be able to eliminate the bacteria just simply because of the history of the site and how it's confounded us so far. However, we do feel confident that we're going to remove the human contact from, you know, from the issue. So, and we'll also be creating the wetland habitat at the same time.
I would just like to expand on the issue of public access, and I would encourage you to try to identify a specific project that you could come back with, not only talking with your other partners, as you mentioned, about ADA access, but we've heard of the importance of public access at Roy's Redwoods at the meeting, the last meeting the commission held, and you talked to us about some of the other access programs countywide. I'm just concerned that we're having this great project being completed and there's no companion program to ensure adequate public access, and certainly the parking on the highway is highly desirable, highly constrained, difficult, and I would hope that a specific project could be identified and funded in the near term.
Yeah, it's definitely something, as I mentioned, we're working on to try and figure out, you know, what would that project be and what would it take to fund it.
That's great to hear, because I would just underscore its importance. Yeah. I would now ask for, unless there are other comments from commissioners, I would ask for public comment here in the audience. Hearing none, I would ask for comments on the line.
Chair Diet, there are no speakers in the queue.
Craig, that was an excellent presentation. I really do appreciate it and all the hard work you all have done over the past 8 years. I think we're now at item number 9. Do we have any commissioner reports?
I did have a question about, were we supposed to be sworn in for a new term?
I think we'll do that at the November meeting.
What's that?
Oh, there you go. We're going to do it after.
After this meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wondered if, following up on the earlier report when Joe mentioned about continuing conversation with those interested in the Bulk Gulch Trail and environmental review, whether it would make sense to have an informal committee or task force or some commissioners who wanted to participate in that continuing dialogue.
I mean, you know, your commission certainly has the ability to create a subcommittee if that's of interest. I would just say that we're at this point now where we're going to navigate the environmental document. And I think that's going to take our intentional focus.
Yes.
You know, I think we have had conversations. We have heard from the neighbors. I think there are, you know, we've certainly incorporated as much as we can with what is within our jurisdiction and our capabilities. I think that there is going to, you know, certainly continue to be areas that we can't accommodate their concerns as far as being outside of our bounds, the boundaries, the property boundaries. So, you know, we certainly will continue to try and be good neighbors and work with them. But I just think that there's going to also be some areas that we're going to have to agree to disagree on.
That makes sense. I was thinking of it more in the context of having a conversation about alternatives that would be examined and considered. And as you properly said, some are outside your jurisdiction, but some may be within. And we've got.
I'm all about fostering interaction with the community to build support. But I do want to offer a couple of cautions within open meetings in the Brown Act.
Yeah.
About what that participation looks like.
Absolutely.
Who it's made available to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen too many projects where it's well-meaning. We want to have a dialogue with you, and then that turns into an accusation later on. Well, you only talk to one or two members of the community, not the whole community, which is why I think relying on the CEQA process is a much safer place to be, because built into that process are guidelines about who you invite, how you invite them, how you keep a record of that involvement, and then how you respond.
I think that's an excellent point, but it may be that some commissioners want to be aware of those opportunities.
I would, again, offer a real caution, because it seems you open yourself up, if it's not handled in a very open way, to an accusation as to who gets to talk to whom and what was said and what was promised. Well, and this is a very charged atmosphere. So I would particularly urge some caution about how you proceed on this.
I think my intent is to make sure that there's a conduit still with the community and our oversight, that we're supposed to be representing the community. And I just want to make sure the community knows that as a commission, we're listening to them.
Then what I would suggest is do it by putting on the agenda of the next commission meeting that you are inviting further public comment on this. Do it as an information item if you want to, but I think what you're going to do is
we've already had that kind of.
But at least you are following a process that is open to everybody to know what you are doing and has a record of what you've done. And I do feel really strongly about that.
I completely agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think my only is intentions. I know the road to hell can be paved with good intentions. I want to make sure that I don't go there. So I would say.
I will say at the last meeting, I shared my contact information. I have an open door policy. Supervisor Lucan has certainly expressed the same with the same community, and folks understand that they can certainly reach out. They know where we're at. But I think that we, at this point, we should stay focused on the preparation of the environmental documents and the permitting applications, and then go through, as Commissioner Lowndes said, go through that CEQA process.
But isn't it true, as part of the environmental document, there's a scoping session that takes place, and usually that scoping session is a public meeting?
If you want to have a public meeting that's appropriately noticed and that it's documented as to who attended, what was said to whom, then that's the process to be followed. I just would say I would not think that the way to go would be to have a subcommittee there's individual outreach, or say, hey, if you've got a question, come talk to me about it.
I think we've abandoned that, but I was just wondering if, as part of the formal CEQA review, usually there's a scoping context in the beginning.
Yeah, I don't have the actual process laid out in front of me right now, so I'm not comfortable answering process, but I want to urge caution, because we didn't agendize this and it's not something that
I think we're noticed. Just asking for the next meeting, maybe you could come back with some ideas.
Perhaps it would be a limited information item that would simply be an update on your current calendar for all of the steps that were laid out in the last presentation about the process.
So I think during my next director's report, I can certainly provide an update on the process and what that's going to look like.
Right. Is the timeline the same, or has it been revised?
Okay.
Because as I recall, that timeline and the steps, they did include public outreach meetings. They did include, in fact, those have already gone forward. There has been publicly noticed community meetings already. And so as you step through the process, I think you always want to be consistent what you're doing for one project versus another project. I feel like a voice in the wilderness saying we have a community of laws. which may or may not be so of it anymore. But I think it's really important that we do follow what we're supposed to follow.
Agreed. I agree with that completely, and I want to make sure we stay within our boundaries. But I think part of it goes back to what is the purpose of our commission, and part of the commission is to make sure that we're representing all the members of the community. And I just want to make sure the members of the community know that we're not just kind of going through this process and saying, yeah, we check this box, too bad. I want to make sure they know that we are here because we care about what their concerns are, that we listen to their concerns. We want to make sure that we've addressed them in the most equitable way and that everything's been addressed. And in hindsight, we don't have any regrets. And so I'll say I'm kind of new to this forum and this practice, and I just want to make sure that is our responsibility, that in the end of the day, we can say, we did what they would want us to do.
I totally agree. Yeah. We're here to represent the community, to listen, to perform our functions about voting on certain things, making recommendations to the Board of Supervisors. But I think it's really, really important we do honor the Open Meetings Act.
Absolutely.
And how we communicate with the public, because the moment you stray from that, mm-hmm. now you build distrust into
Absolutely.
The system and distrust about, well, how are you really making your decisions if it's not made in full light of what everybody can see?
And that there's certainly nothing stopping you from going out as an individual commissioner on your mm-hmm. own to go out and explore the hike, have conversations yeah. with those that are out on the trail as well.
Absolutely.
Experience it for yourself and certainly report out during your commissioner report time during the agenda.
Okay, great. I think more than anything else, I just want to make sure that we're serving the purpose of listening, of representing the community, and that they know that we're hearing them.
Well, yeah. We had a 3-hour meeting last time. Yeah. Hearing them. Yes.
Yes, I know that. I know that. But I feel that's part of our duty.
Mm-hmm. And at the risk of beating a dead horse, let me just tell you where I'm coming from, which is 20 years of doing work with the federal system, dealing with public notice and commented issues, and seeing way too many meritorious projects get derailed because people meant well in terms of talking to folks individually, only to have it thrown in their face later, but somehow that was portrayed as being an arbitrary action that they took. And so I think you should always err on the side of being very, very open mm-hmm. and very process oriented, not to stiff arm comment, mm-hmm. but to make sure everybody feels they have fair access.
Well said.
Yes.
Thank you both.
Yeah,
I think we're clear. I have nothing more to report on the work of the FAR, the FAR I'd been a liaison with, and next time I'll report on Measure A. I guess we should ask for public comment on commissioners' reports, but if there are any final public comments on what we just said, now's the time to speak up, both here in the audience and in the queue. Nothing in the queue.
Chair Dyett, there are no speakers in the queue.
Well, at that point, then I guess it's the time to, unless you have something more to say.
No, well, the next meeting is the third Thursday in November.
So I was going to adjourn the meeting to the third Thursday, November 20th.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you.